in the fourth perek. The fourth perek focuses on issues of acquisition, kinyanim, different types of kinyanim, that also sales ethics, which we'll talk about onaa, that we'll talk about as the course of the next few weeks. And one of the first things that that comes up in the Masechet, almost as an aside, the overall framework of the Mishnah. I didn't ask you to read the entire Mishnah, the first Mishnah of the parak, but the focus is on what's known as kinyan kesef, purchasing, acquiring things with the use of funds. In other words, if I give money, just as a simple purchase, I decide, right, here, Josh Jackson has this lovely mug, the old yeshiva Eretz Hatzvi logo on it, right? And I realize that this is soon going to be a collector's item, right? Because it has the old logo. And so I say, you know what, I want to, you know, purchase this and then be able to store it on eBay for a little while, okay? And I go over to Josh and I say, okay, you know what, I want to purchase this. And he gives me a price, a reasonable price, which, whatever it is, we'll say 20 shekel, okay? And I think it over and I decide, okay. And I give him the 20 shekel. All right. So that's what's called kinyan kesef, right? I've given him the 20 shekel. But the only thing is that he hasn't given me the goods yet, right? It's still sitting on the table. And so a question, which we'll get to in a moment, is, well, is it mine? I've given him the money, or not? Or is it still his, and he just owes me 20 shekel, whereas he could change his mind and then say, okay, you know what, here's your 20 shekel back. Obviously, he can't keep both. But I can't force him on the sale, and vice versa. I could say, you know what, I just changed my mind. I'd like to have my 20 shekel back. Or can he say, no, sale is, you know, done deal, and here's your mug. Right? Okay, that's a question. But within that context, the Mishnah, and this is a little more specialized because of the nature, there are different types of coins, and the question of what is considered to be the kesef when you have different currencies. If I were to, let's say, in just a modern setting, if I were to be purchasing, someone were to, if I have shekel and I'm buying euro, right, with the shekel, I'm going off to travel in Europe, and a friend of mine has, or a money changer, it doesn't really matter, and I give him the shekel, right, is that I gave him money, right, or is the euro the money, right? What is the object being purchased here, and what is the cash? Okay, that's a side question, which I don't need to get into right now. But in that context, the Mishnah says the following. Mishnah says that natan lo ma'ot v'lo mashach emenu perot. If I gave Josh the cash, but I did not yet take the mug, yachol lachzor bo. So I can back out of the deal. Aval amru mi shepara mi'anshei dor hamabul midor haflaga hu atid li para mimi she'eno omed b'dibur. But the Chachamim said that whoever paid back the people of the mob, of the generation of the flood, the generation of the scattering, back to Parshat Noah from a couple of weeks ago, he will in the future pay back whoever does not stand up for his word. Right? I made the purchase, I gave the money, and now Josh backs up. So the very strong words say basically what came to the people of the door of Mabul should come to Josh for backing out of that deal. Right? That's very harsh, you know. Dying in a flood is not simple stuff. So this is but that's the intention. We have to talk about what does that mean and what are the context of it. All of these things, but we'll get to in just a couple of minutes. But this idea, when you think about it, is comes down to a notion of commercial interaction, which is being governed by something other than simple monetary concerns. Whereas if I were to say, let's, you know, just ask the question to you guys, right? I gave Josh the money, right? And now Josh has second thoughts. Can he back out of the deal? Right? What should be the only consideration?
If you haven't taken the mug yet.
If I haven't taken the mug yet, what should be the only consideration that has to be examined? Right? I don't know anything about halacha. I don't know anything about the legal circumstances, but I can ask what is the question that needs to be dealt with. Yeah?
If it was a deal that's fair for
the price. The deal is fair. It's a fair price.
The money was used?
I gave the money. The money hasn't been used. It's sitting, it's, you know, Josh is holding the cash in his hand. And I say, you know what? I don't want to go through with the deal. And Josh says, no, sorry. Right? Or vice versa. It doesn't really matter who's backing out. Yeah? So,
if the mug is yours, even though he didn't give it to you, because you gave him the money.
Right. That, so, basically, so...
Who owns the mug?
Who owns the mug? Right? In other words, basically, what is a... A kinyan? That's a very simple question. Is this a legal transaction? What defines the legal transaction? Is the money passing hands the legal transaction? Is the item being shipped the legal transaction? Right? What is the legal transaction? That's all. Right? In other words, today, let's say if you purchase something on the internet, right? Go on the Amazon site. So what is the... At what point does it effectively become yours?
When you pay.
When you pay, right? So as you gave your credit card information, it's accepted. Now, you may, given under the circumstances that exist, you may have an opportunity to, you know, there might be a return policy, you can cancel your order, but the order is there. Right? As if there would be a breach of contract, it wouldn't be on the breach of contract would be if the item didn't ship. Right? That would be considered the breach of contract. So halachically, is that the same thing, or no? Do we say that that's not what defines it from a halachic perspective? What defines from a halachic perspective is when the item is actually delivered. That's when it becomes yours. Okay, so. We could say one way, we could say the other way, we could say both. Right? If I came to an agreement with Josh as to what the price is, and I say, but I don't have any money on me, and he says, don't worry about it, you can pay me next week, and he gives me the mug, maybe that's also a good transaction. And neither party can back out. Right? If I give him the money and he hasn't given me the mug yet, maybe that's the transaction, or maybe both are the transaction. That's fine. But whatever the answer is going to be, that's how you would be able to define it. If you were to say the transaction is not a valid transaction, and you were to back out of the deal at that point, what would the response be in the modern market?
Like
you losing your reputation. I negotiated a price, right? And go, you know, forget about mugs. Make it on a building. Make it something more significant. I don't care, car. And then I say, okay, we come to terms on the car. I give the money, and then I say, you know what? I don't want the car. Give me my money back. And if legally I could do that, what would the repercussions be? Zero. Maybe there would be a little ill will between Josh and myself because I wasted his time, you know? But there wouldn't be, you know, any, you know, moral cloud hanging over me. Right? Here, we have this being presented as a very significant moral deficiency. Because after all, you know, think about what we're saying. There's a curse. Right? And this is the Gemara, and one of the Gemara, I don't know how far you guys got in the Gemara. If you open up the Gemara, flip open the Gemara now. So Daf Mem Chet. Right? Hopefully you all have your Gemaras. kind of look bad. Right? Back of the Gemara. Gemara says, other than back, top of the Gemara, excuse me. Itmar, right? On this line, Amru Misha Para, just so you understand what's going on here. Right? This is really just an overview shiur. I'm not going to go too far, too much in depth. Hopefully next week we'll examine some issues a little bit more deeply. Gitmar. So it was said. Here's the question, right? An Itmar, as you all should know, what does an Itmar mean? It's an Amoraitic discussion to describe something which is not explicit in Tanaitic sources. Okay, that's what an Itmar is. So Itmar, with regard to this, there is Abaye Amar, Oduye Modiyin Le, Rabba Amar, Melat Laitinan Le. Okay, what does Oduye Modiyin Le mean? We notify him. Lahudiya, right? To let him know. In other words, basically, we tell the person, listen, this is not a good thing that you're doing. Okay? Rabba says, no. Melat laitinam. What does melat laitinam mean, man? We curse him. In other words, it's not just simply that we tell him, you know, listen, morally, you're doing something which is questionable. Melat laitinam means, and there are some who go so far as to say, that you take the person in Beit Din, you make a public statement about this, and you don't simply say Misha Para Be Anshe Dor Hamabu Me Anshe Dor Flaga Hu Atidli Para Le Misha Eino Omed B'Diburo, right, in the third person, the one who will not stand, but we say it in the second person, right? We say it, right? Hu Atidli Para Mimcha. You, and point to him, right? This is a pretty scary thing. You have dayanim who are cursing a person in court, right? This is how strong we be pagan. And why, right? So Abaye says you can't curse a person. Abaye Amar Odeim Odin Le'Dechtiv Nasib Am Chalo Taor. We say we have a there's an avera to curse another Jew. You can't just. We don't willy-nilly curse people, even if we think that they've done something wrong. It's very, very strong. And Rabba turns around and says to Abaye, no, Amar Melat Laitinam, we can curse him, Tichtiv, Ba'amacha, Ba'osei Ma'asei Amcha. Right? When people do something which is inherently undermining, something which is not Jewish, so then you can curse that person. Right, it goes against the grain of what it means to be a Jew. That's the idea of Misha Para here that's being said. Now, this is very, very strong words.
Is it saying you can?
What?
Is it saying that you can or you should?
It's saying that we should. Now, again, with regard to, it's important to keep things in perspective. From a modern perspective, this might not seem like such a terrible penalty. Right? From the perspective of the Gemara, right, and in a closed society, and especially if you are a person who very much buys into the, if you will, the seriousness of what's going on in the Beit Din, right, these type of curses or these type of statements can be in a way more significant than any monetary penalty. Right, and we'll see in a moment why exactly what I mean by that. Yeah, Alicia, you have your hand up. No, so.
I'm sure, like, we've learned it with Ron Zeb, like this similar kind of halacha, that if there's like a major significant money difference or what it is. Then you're halachically allowed to do it. So in that case, we're halachically allowed to do it.
So we are going to, that's exactly what we're going to discuss, hopefully, in next week in the shir, exactly under what circumstances can a person back out. And we'll see that it's not a simple matter at all. There's a lot of different discussions and seemingly contradictory ideas, and we'll have to flesh that out. But right now, let's assume that the price hasn't changed. Okay, everything is the same. The only thing that's changed is my mind. Right? you gave me, there's no reason, I just, maybe on a whim, or maybe I felt uncomfortable with the deal all along, and then something just said, no, don't go through with it, I want it. Right? But nothing has changed in terms of the actual. So, before I, I started now just learning the Mishnah and the discussion, the Amoraim, in terms of understanding what Misha Para is, but the before we get to that, right, or not now, it's after, but there's a, I put another source up, right? I gave you a pasuk in a Ramban, right? And this is something which is an incredibly important Ramban. This is, I mentioned a similar Ramban in Shir the other day. This is the type of, this is what I would call a literacy piece. Okay, this is a Ramban that if you are a literate Torah Jew, you should be aware of this Ramban. Okay? So let's take a look at what the Ramban says and then puts everything into a different perspective. The Ramban says the following. On the pasuk of the following, Yatzita hayashar v'ato b'nei Hashem. Torah says, do what is right and upright in the upright and good in the eyes of God. Leman yitavla, in order that it will be made good for you, that God will make things good for you. Uvata, and you will come. V'yirashta ta'aretz atova shenishpa Hashem l'avotech, that God, and you will come and you will inherit the land, the good land. Notice how many times the word tov appears in the pasuk, 3 different times, right? That you do the good, and God will do good for you, and you will inherit the good land. Okay? Tov, tov, tov. Right? Lots of good. What is meant by this? So, on a pshat level, it's basically saying, well, do the upright, the proper thing in general. And there's a basic idea of reward and punishment. And if you do what you're supposed to do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reward you as well. The Ramban points out a midrash on this pasuk. The Rabotenu, in the first few lines that I didn't have you read, the Ramban talks about the pshat of the pasuk within the context of the context of the other pasukim that are there. You should all look up that part of the Ramban as well, but it's not totally relevant for what we're discussing now. Rabotenu b'zeh midrash yefer, and our Chachamim had a beautiful midrash. Amru zop shara v'lifnim mishurat hadin. So what is tov v'yashar? This refers to what's pshara?
Compromise.
And doing what is l'fnim mishurat hadin. Beyond the letter of the law. Okay. Sometimes you might say the spirit of the law, perhaps, but the beyond the letter of the law. If you take a look, right, why did the Chachamim talk about compromise here? What are they talking about going beyond the letter of the law? Because initially, in the Psukim beforehand, the discussion is keeping the various halachot, chukim, eduyot, etc., that you're supposed to, that God has commanded us. And now, the pasuk says, "Gam ba'asher lo tzivcha." Also, those things that you were not commanded to do, "Tein da'atcha la'asot ha'tov v'yashar be'enav." Also, in those things where there isn't a specific command, try to do what you think is good and upright in God's eyes. "Ki hu ohev ha'tov v'yashar," because that's what God loves. God loves good things and upright people. V'zeh inyan gadol. Now the Ramban says these, as I said, this is a seminal piece. L'fi she'i efshar la'azkir b'torah kol hanogot ha'adam v'mishkena v're'a v'chol masa'o v'matano v'tikunei ha'yishuv ha'medinot kulam. It is impossible, the Ramban says, to have, there's been a lot written in, if you will, in Torah law since the Torah. Right? You have all of the Torah Shebaal Peh. And think about it, right? I said, 119 daf, 118, if you want to get rid of daf Aleph. 118 daf of Gemara and daf of Metziah. It's only 1/3 of Nezikin, right? You have all of Choshen Mishpat, all of the Tshuva literature, everything that's been written until now. And it still is not going to cover every single possible case. Eafshar lahazkir b'Torah, it's just an impossibility. No matter how much you have to describe every human interaction. Aval acharei shehizkir mehem harbeh. So now the Ramban says, but the Torah gives us a lot of mitzvot about on the ben adam l'chaver osan. Kigom, lo telech rachil, lo takum v'lo titar, tikom v'lo titar. Right? Don't be, don't speak lashon hara. Don't avenge. Don't bear a grudge. Lo tamod al dam reyecha. Don't stand and watch another person suffering. Lo tekalel cheresh. Don't curse the deaf person, which means don't speak behind people's backs. Lo mipnei seva takum, uchiyotze behem. Respect the elderly and the like. Chazar, notice, by the way, that he chose almost all of those examples are not monetary examples. Right? But they're within the same moral fabric. And he says, Chazar lomar b'derech klal sheyaseh tov v'hayashar b'chol davar. In other words, you have to understand what is the spirit of all of those halachot. If you understand what the spirit of those halachot is, then you can act upon that spirit in a much broader framework than if you're looking at each particular mitzvah. As if you're saying there is a loophole, or there isn't a loophole. Right? Loopholes are great, right? If there is no moral framework behind it. Whereas if there is a tax code, and the tax code says, you know, you have to pay capital gains. You have to pay 15%, 20%, whatever it is. But here's just an example. You can turn, right, you buy stocks. Let's say you invest in real estate. Okay? And you have and your investment pays off. Okay? You invested 5 years ago, it's now worth twice as much as it was when you invested in the property. And you sell the property, right? So you've now made, I don't know, not a huge investment, $100,000, okay? Nice size gain, made $100,000. So you have to pay capital gains tax, 15%. How much do you have to pay? Higher math?
$15,000,
right? Okay, not difficult. But now there's a loophole in the tax code that if you turn over that investment, this happens to exist in the tax code both in Israel and in the United States. If you turn over that and you take the money and you don't put it in the bank, but you immediately invest it in another real estate project. Right, so then you don't have to pay the tax. Right, so you invested $100,000, you took out your $200,000, and you now put $200,000 in another property. Right, so you don't have to pay the tax. So would you say that there is something, well, you've just cheated the government by finding another? Right, I took a relatively straightforward case. There are others. Have you cheated anyone by doing that? Right. That was, and even if the legislator didn't realize that this loophole existed, right, I gave an example where it was done with this in mind in order to allow for further investment. Okay, but if it wasn't done in the investment with this in mind, but there just happens to be a loophole in the tax code, right? And you find it, right? That's what good accountants do. They find the loopholes and they help their clients, take advantage of them, right? So, is there anything morally wrong with that, Drew? Is there anything morally wrong with that?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, there is?
Yeah.
Why? Right? What? There's nothing morally wrong with that. Right? Because there isn't a moral fabric behind it, per se. In other words, is there anything morally wrong? It's in the news right now. Is there anything morally wrong with the fact that Amazon hasn't paid any sales tax on all of their sales? They've had tens of billions of dollars worth of business and they haven't paid any taxes on it legally? Is there anything morally wrong with that?
No.
Of course not. Right? Now, you could say there's something wrong with the tax code and we have to change that. Right? That there's no reason why they shouldn't pay it. Right? There's no reason why Yale should have its be a tax-exempt institution, right? And all other private universities. You could say there's something wrong with the tax code, but as long as that's the tax code, there's nothing immoral on the party to say we should donate the tax that we would pay were we not a private educational institution, right? So this is the way we could look at Torah law. And the Ramban says that is not the way that you should be looking at the Torah law. Whereas here, when it comes to it, you have to ask, what is Tov V'Yashar? Right? You have that moral responsibility. So the moral responsibility exists even if the legal responsibility doesn't exist. That is an incredible statement. Now this Ramban has a parallel. Maybe turn on the air conditioner. It's getting a little warm in here. Maybe. What's the parallel? Right? A little more famous parallel that the Ramban talks about. Kedoshim tiyu. Right? Lo yeh. Finish the sentence for me. Naval. Birshut. HaTorah. Right, not to be a scoundrel with the Torah's permission. So Ramban uses that terminology with regard to be a holy person, with regard to Ben Adam Lemakom. Right, it says, listen, the Torah has something in mind when it tells me to keep kosher. The Torah has something in mind when it tells me to control my sexual impulses. And so now I have to ask, what does the Torah have in mind to be a kadosh person? What does it mean to be a kadosh person? So it might mean that, to use the terminology, right, and I'll borrow from Rav Ebner, right, that we decry gluttony, right? That to be a glutton with a glatt kosher hashgacha, right? That is something which is not appropriate. That's not kedoshim. But it's the exact same concept that the Ramban is saying here. Whereas basically the Ramban says, whether you're talking about Torah Ben Adam L'Chaver, when you're talking about Ben Adam L'Makom, there are different goals. To be a kadosh is not necessarily the same as being a tov v'yashar. You can be a person who is good, who's upright, who's honest in everything, and he's not kadosh. He's not a holy person. You could be a person who is holy, but is not at all a person who is concerned about other people's welfare. Right? There are two parts of a religious persona. Either way, you're an incomplete religious persona if you don't have both. But in both, what they both have in common is that they're not limited to what the Torah tells you. The Torah's mitzvot are there to give you a sense of what is supposed to be accomplished and what's not supposed to be accomplished. And then you are supposed to fill in the blanks with the principle. You have the mitzvot give you the guidelines. And then you have the principle, and the principle is for you to apply those guidelines in circumstances where the guidelines don't necessarily apply directly. There isn't a clear halacha on this, but you know what the Torah would have said, the spirit, if you will, of the law. That is the idea behind Shara and Lifnim Mishurat Hadin, if you're talking about Ve'asita Ayashar Ve'atov Be'nei Hashem Elokecha, to do what's good and what's right. And that's what applying in Ben Adam L'Makom with regard to Kedoshim Tihiyu. Okay, that is what the Rabban is saying, and that's the background for our Mishnah. when our Mishnah talks about this idea of being that you're doing something wrong, you've made a deal with another person, you have given him money, and now you back out. Or again, it's both sides, right? It doesn't matter who is the person who is backing out of the deal. It's been clear that something has been accomplished, and legally it might not be binding. The ink isn't quite dry on the contract yet. But nevertheless, the intent of the parties is clear, and an action has occurred, and you back out. So that's like the that is as bad as being in the Dor HaMabul and the Dor HaPlaga. And then I want to get to where those examples come from. Okay, we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. But question? Okay. Before we get to that, I just want to look at the fourth source here on the page. I realize the fourth Gemara. The Gemara not in the fourth Perek. The Gemara is actually in the fifth Perek of Bav Metzia. We will talk about this perhaps in a larger framework that comes a little bit further on, because it has a lot of ramifications that are going to be binding. If you open up the Gemara in Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, flip your page. Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph. The sixth line of the Gemara. Sixth line from the top. Everyone have it? Amar Rav Papa. Got it, Drew?
Yeah.
Okay. Amar Rav Papa Mishmei Derava. Rav Papa said in the name of Rava. Hai Sin Tumta. Did anyone reach this Gemara, by the way, in the preparation? So what's a Sin Tumta? A seal. Kanya. That makes a deal. Okay? Now, Rashi on this explains the following. Situmta, chotem shirosh bin chenvanim al chaviyot shel yayin, shelokhin arvei biyachad, umenich noto ba'otsar ha-ba'alin, umolichin oto achat linkor l'chanut, roshmin oto ledaat shekol rishmod im karot. Words, you have the very simple scenario, but very common scenario. I purchase something from a wholesaler, a large lot. I am the retailer, and the wholesaler gives me 10,000 units that I purchase from him, but I don't have the storage facilities for all 10,000 units, right? I'm a small retailer. So the agreement that I come up with him is that he's going to keep it in his warehouse, but the warehouse, right, this happens a lot of times. You'll go to a place and you'll see sometimes even in the retail level, you'll see the item is still on the shelf, and you'll say, oh, I'd like to purchase that, and they said, no, it's already been sold. Right? And the show, then the person's version of name there, or whatever marking is there. Okay, fine. So here, they, in this lot of barrels of wine, so it's set aside, for Sussman's liquor store. Bar 55. Okay? Okay? So fine. So now, it's set aside. But no. So the Gemara says that's the marking of the wholesaler, putting the lot aside, as it were. For me, that's a kinyan. Now, I'll just give you a little insider information here. That's not a kinyan. Right? No money necessarily has passed hands here. No other kinyan has been made. It's simply sort of like a shake of a hand type of deal, right, on the Diamond District. That's been made. The Gemara says that works. It's a kinyan. Because this is, just to give you the sense of what's going on, basically, when it comes to the, and this is a little bit different on the, let's say, between commercial items and, or ben adam lechavero, as opposed to ben adam lemakos, right? There isn't something which is set in stone. Right? Societies change. I gave you an example of an internet purchase. Bitcoin might be different. All of these things are very different than the type of purchases that were being made when the monetary system was more or less based on the silver content in the coin. So does that make it any less of a valid purchase? Not necessarily. Maybe yes, maybe no. And here we're taking a... So that's a valid question. So the Gemara says that the Kinyan works, right? So let's say I... used to be, I don't know if it still is, 47th Street, which is the Diamond District in New York, the way that people would seal a deal on a large diamond purchase would be shaking hands. Right? On the wholesale level. You shake a hand, and now that's done. So that, since in that, again, it's localized. If I shake a hand on something else, right, might not mean anything. But within the context of the Diamond District, it means everything. So that Kinyan, the Gemara says, works. That's what a situmta is. In this case, it happens to be a form of marking. The Gemara says, continues, it says that, lemai hilchata, what do you mean it's a Kinyan? So Rav Chaviva Amar, Rav Chaviva said, lemikanye mamash. It actually works as a Kinyan. You shook on it, it's done. It's a deal. You can't back out on it anymore. Rabbanan Amre, Rabbanan say, Likibule alai mishaparu. It's the equivalent of our case in the Mishnah where you gave cash, but the Kinyan is not totally full, but there is, if you back out, you're liable for this curse. The Hilchata, the Halacha, Likibule alai mishapara. Indeed, to accept the mishapara, however, with the following proviso, uva atra dinahigu lemikne mamash kanu. Well, basically, you have to check if you do an action. It's not simply now. If I shake hands on it, Gemara is saying, in any place when some kind of action has been done, then that's enough for a mishapara. On 47th Street, I can't back out at all. So on 48th Street, I will get a mishapara for doing it. I'll be cursed if I back out on the deal. On 47th Street, I can't back out at all. Right? You can take me to court and force me to keep to the deal. By the way, presumably, if you're forced to keep to the deal, even if, let's say, prices have changed, right? That would hold up, but we'll talk more about that, you know, some other time. But basically, we're saying that, okay, you get a mishapara if you do an action which is recognized as having some kind of validity. Not total validity, because then you can't back out at all. But if I go beyond the spoken word and I do something, I can't back out without serious moral condemnation. Right? Mishapara is very serious moral condemnation. Okay. What we're going to talk about next week, not going to get into now, is what happens if I haven't done anything. If we just gave our word. We didn't even shake on it. We just negotiated a deal. And then I say, I'm changing my mind. Okay, that, I'm not going to talk about it now. Right? But that's something to think about. The very fact, by the way, that you can even ask the question, what happens if you've negotiated a deal and then one party backs out, tells you, right, speaks volumes about the moral ramifications, right? So all, you know, the underpinnings for all of this, you know, normally speaking, part of this, the Shir Klali, is supposed to also be a Sicha. Right? That's the way we've scheduled it. Right? Part of it's going to be Gemara, part of it's Sicha. This sugya is a Sicha. Right? To talk about the moral responsibilities that people have. Right? Just by giving your word, right? I don't think you can think of a better Sicha than that. Right? But let's just finish up the idea of Mishapara. Mishapara, right? The question is, what I'd like to focus on now, the last few minutes, right? About 10 minutes before. What? Why this formulation? It's a very funny formulation. Think about it. who has ever, right, who paid back the people of the flood and the people of the dispersion shall pay back the person who does not stand by his word. Right? Now, where did that come from? Like, why pick those things? Yeah.
Could it possibly be highlighting the severity of what actually led to the extreme severity that's done at the time of the Dormah Bull, and paralleling it that to really do what they did is just as bad as it would be.
Okay.
Also, wasn't it something about receiving the punishment for Olam Hazeh? Not necessarily in Olam Haba, like a character.
Okay, so we'll go. So let's take a look at some of the answers here. Now, I want to, before I answer that, I want to also ask one other question. Okay, there's another formulation, which is actually the one that's brought in the halacha. Let's see if I put it here in the Shulchan Aruch. I did not. Okay. But it's the Gemara on Daf Memtet. Okay. The Gemara adds another layer. It's brighter. But this is what's brought in the Shulchan Aruch. There's another group of people who are added. Not just the Dor HaMabul and the Dor HaFlaga, but also, well, let's take a look. What? Nope. That would be a good guess. That's what I would have expected. Right? The fact that Stone isn't there is almost, like, begs the question. Take a look at Memchet Amud Aleph. I said Memchet, my mistake. Memchet. Rabbi Shimon Omer. Very top of the Gemara. I didn't put it on the sheet. Right? Because it's more of the, deals with the question if you don't actually do something. But here he said, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ava Bisha Amru Talit Koned Dinar Zahav. Ve'en Dinar Zahav Koned Talit. What that means is, even though we say that if I take the talit, right, I'm purchasing a talit, and I take the talit into my possession, now I owe the coin. I owe the money. But the other way around, it doesn't hold the truth. If I give the money, so then for whatever the reason, the purchase isn't finalized yet. Mikol makom, kach halacha. That is that's the halacha. But amru misha para me'anshei dor avavu me'anshei dor aflaga me'anshei stom va'amora. So stom va'amora is mentioned here. Excuse me. Umimitzrayim bayam. Mitzrayim at the sea. Hu atid li para mimisheino omed b'dibur. Okay, so now you have new categories of people. You have the Dor HaMabul, Dor HaFlaga, you have Sodom and Amora, and then you have the Egyptians. Okay? Now, I can look at this from one of two perspectives, right? One of the two. Look at it from the perspective of the, if you will, well, let's try to see what we can say. Let's take a look at the Meiri. Meiri says the following. Mashi is kiri bezo, this is the Meiri actually on Memcha. Mashi is kiri bezo anshei dor mabul, number 6 on the sheet. Mibnei shema'asav shel zeh domin lema'aseihem. Right? One way of looking at it is simply to say there's a moral equivalence of what you're doing to what they did. Now you think about it, one second, a moral equivalence, right, of the Dor HaMabul, of Sodom and Amorah, with what I did by simply backing out of a deal? Where does that come from? So he explains. Shehayu gozlin al tzad shelo hayu beidin yecholin lehizakek letovei. He says, what characterized these different generations? So what characterized them is that they found the loophole. They found the loophole to do things which were morally wrong, but they could not be brought to court for. V'hu shamru b'talmud ha-ma'arav, and he quotes in Yerushalmi, Ma'ayach ha-maz shal anshei dor ha-mabul, Havechad barnash nafik v'tayin kupa melayat turmesin. So somebody would claim a pile of peas. Hayu ba'im v'notlin mimenu pachot pachot mishaveh pruta. They would steal less than a pruta's worth. In other words, less than a legal claim, but there would be 1,000 people coming taking a few peas. Right? It's an example, right, of a case where you can't be prosecuted for it. It's they just doing a lot of misdemeanors to the point that it makes a mockery of the law. Right? So that's the idea that's going on here. Similarly, Kein hayu mazkirim ha-mitzriim shelo hayu omdim b'diburam kamo shenemar bahem hayta revacha v'achbed et libo. In other words, why were the Egyptians thrown in here? Because the Egyptians, or Paro specifically, so he kept saying that he's going to let the Jews free. Right? Going to let the Jews go, But Israel, then he keeps changing his mind. The idea that the Meiri is trying to say is that in all of these scenarios, basically you have a situation where the moral responsibility exists, and the person, but the legal responsibility doesn't necessarily exist. Okay, that's the idea. When it comes to Stone Amara, he doesn't mention this here, but there's a Mishnah in Avot. The Mishnah says the following. The Mishnah says there are four. Listen to what the Mishnah says. Arba midot ba'ada. There are four types of people. Ha'omer shali shali v'shalcha shalcha. Okay. Well, I'm going to take the Mishnah out of order. Okay. We'll do the other points first. Shali shalach v'shalach shalcha. What is mine is yours, and what's yours is yours. What is that? A chassid, right? Very generous person. I respect your property rights. You are more than welcome to take I'm very generous with my own. Shali v'shali v'shalcha shali. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine, is a rasha, right? Okay. What about the person says shali shalcha v'shalcha shali, right? No property rights.
Communist.
Gemara gives a different term. Mishnah gives another term, right? Amaretz. Right? In other words, the person doesn't recognize property rights. I can forfeit my own property rights. I can't forfeit your property rights. Okay, that's an amaretz. What about someone who says shali shali b'shalcha shalcha? What's mine is mine. What's yours is yours.
Benoni.
So that the Mishnah says benoni, an average person, right? And then the Mishnah adds another one. V'yesh omrim zomidat stone. This is the characteristic of stone. In other words, the sense that everything is going to be judged by the legal definition. And if I haven't purchased it yet, technically, so then I can back out. And my word isn't worth anything. Because you can't hold me accountable by law. You need a written contract. You need to have done a proper transaction. And if you haven't done the proper transaction, okay. So it was just talk. Right? In Hebrew you'll say, they say it a lot around election season, right? He promised, right? Hiftiach. And the response is? As if, so he promised. Talk is cheap, right? That is midat stone. In other words, if you can't be held accountable for it, don't hold me accountable, right? That, the Gemara says, is a serious moral flaw. It's missing the point. That leads to the next stage, the stage that we're going to read to in this week's parsha, right? that the tzaka that comes from stone is rabbah. is great, because if you have a society that is totally built on that, there is no chesed in that society. It starts with being laissez-faire capitalists without any social benefits whatsoever, and very rapidly it turns into maybe it takes a few generations, but it devolves eventually into a society of stone. And you think it's not the Rasha. The Rasha is the person taking something from someone else. I'm just Beinoni. I'm not a Hasid. I'm not giving my things away. I'm keeping an eye on number one. Right? And you keep an eye on number one too. That's all. Good fences make good neighbors. Right? That's the way that I want to live my life. And that's why our society should live our life. Right? That is a society of stone. And that is what the Meiri says is going on here in the Misha Parah. The Misha Parah is a warning to the person. It's a curse of the person, because it's saying, this is what you're becoming. Do you really want to be a person of stone? Do you really want to be a person of the Mabul? If you don't, then stand by your word. Even if it seems to be against your interest at the moment. So this is the most basic idea. Right? That's why I decided to start. We're going to talk about different types of kinyanim. We're going to go now, well, what about the next step is, well, what if I do have some interest involved, right? I didn't just back out on a whim. I made a deal with you. No contract was signed yet. And now, you know, there was a crash in the market. Right? I agreed on a purchase price. And now the real estate market has just cratered. So we agreed on $100,000, but the property is only really worth $50,000. Should I take a $50,000 loss? Because we shook on it? If I had signed, I'd be stuck. But now you're stuck. Do I really have to take that kind of loss? So we're going to talk about that next week. But the basic principle that you have to accept, right? And the Torah demands, "Asita hayashar v'atov b'enei Hashem." You always have to be asking, am I doing what is upright and good in the eyes of God? Because if you're not, then God forbid, you are becoming a member of the Dor Mabul, Dor Haflaga, Stone and Amora Club. Have a good afternoon.